Hey, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, a little tired today.
I just got a message from Gina Marie Sandoval that she won't be at the meeting today. Forward it to you.
Okay, thank you.
Michelle.
Make that note so I don't call her during roll. Members excused. Okay.
And that's another question I had for you. Let me see my list. I had two people who missed three in a row. You know, I was about to send them a letter eventually, but I wanted to check in with you first.
Okay.
But, yeah. So.
Do you have those up right now, or you could send me an email or whatever?
I'll send you an email.
Perfect. Okay. Okay. So, of course, the minute I want to say something, dogs have to start barking. So Liz Hutchison reached out to Grace and I today to get the meeting info, and said she has a hard stop at 2. So I just, FYI, the quicker, not that you're going to dawdle over anything, but, like, we should probably call the order right at 1, you know, so we can get both HR and Liz their promised time.
Amy, did you want to, either one of you, Amy, did you want to introduce them, the speakers, or... That's something I should do.
Yeah, usually that would be you, Joe, unless Amy just wants to.
I mean, I never want to. Joe, I also know probably that's the same for you. I'm happy to if you would like me to. Otherwise, I can tell you that Kathy and Kevin are the vice presidents for HR, and Liz Hutchison is the assistant or associate. Associate VP for Division for Equity and Inclusion.
You said executive VP, is that what it's called? Or
no, Liz Hutchison is the assistant.
Assistant.
Yeah. Or I'm sorry, associate.
Associate. Mm-hmm.
Associate Vice President for the Division for Equity and Inclusion. And Kathy Agnew and Kevin Stevenson are the interim assistant vice president for human resources. So Liz is associate, Kathy and Kevin are assistant. And don't ask me who makes those determinations, because and what they're based on, I don't.
So they're interim?
Yes, I don't believe that they've been announced as part of an interim thing. I think it's interim. And Liz is going to talk to us about the Wayfinder app.
Okay.
Yeah. Amy, are you doing okay?
I'm a little tired today. Okay, thanks, Amy. And thank you for sending Liz the meeting information, because I just looked at the email I sent last week to Kathy, Kevin, and I thought Liz, and I sent it to a Brad Hutchins instead.
Uh-oh.
Whoever that is. So
I figured it was something like that because I knew you had sent it out. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe, I just looked in the directory. And it doesn't say interim for Kathy and Kevin, so it's err on the side of
Yeah, not saying interim. We'll just say assistant vice president.
Yeah.
Also, let's not maybe call her out unless she wants to be. But I think that Sydney is going to try and join today. Just to hear.
From the policy office?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just,
mm-hmm. Oh. Does it honor me to call on her with our special meetings? She was there, I thought she should.
Oh, no. I just mean, I know she's coming off bereavement leave, and maybe she wants to talk, and maybe she doesn't this time.
Okay.
I just don't know. Yeah, no, it was perfectly fine for you to say something else.
Okay. I thought it was important to hear from her, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Mark, great job on the response for the committee chairs for the minutes versus monthly reports. I thought you guys came up with two really great options. So thank you again for doing that. I like those options that you guys came up with.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I was gonna send an email also, I just hadn't had a chance. Thanks for doing that. And I'm thinking of option one maybe is the best, but they're both pretty good.
I'm glad you liked it. I wasn't clear if we were supposed to present that to exec before sending it to Joe as committee chair's speaker. I just sent it to Joe.
I don't think that was something you needed to present to exec necessarily. So I think you did just fine.
You may also present them at the all chairs meeting, our next all chairs meeting would be good.
Oh, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, I figured we'd all have a little confab about it at the next chairs meeting, yeah.
Okay, it's 1 p.m. now. Why don't we go ahead and get started, because some people have to leave at 2 o'clock. Go ahead and do a roll call. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Speaker Lane. Hello, everybody. Thank you all for joining us today. Counselors, once I call your name, just please let me know you're here. Counselor Arocha. Beecham?
Here.
Begay? Alonso Silva?
Here.
Chavez? Cushing?
Here.
Desai?
Here.
Hexman? Fisher?
Present.
Flores? Forsyth? Gallegos?
Here.
Councilor Gouch, did I see you?
You did. I'm present.
Wonderful. Thank you, Marvin. Heinemeier? Henley?
Here.
Jones?
Here.
Kafka?
Here.
Lane?
Here.
Lopez? Luna?
Present.
Martinez? Okay, Kelly? McQuarrie? Montoya? Mount?
Here.
Maria?
Here.
Olay? Ortiz?
Present.
Tibbs?
Here.
Robinson?
Here.
Tucker?
Here.
Sakiestua?
Here.
Sawyer?
Present.
Serna?
Here.
Sloan? Smith?
Here.
Stoddard?
Present.
Carol?
Here.
Thomas?
Here.
Torres?
Here.
Trujillo?
Present.
Trujillo McClure?
Present.
Wood?
Present.
Zier? And do we have our parliamentarian Adam Hathaway here today?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, as always, for being here, Adam. Are there any counselors that did not hear their name called during roll that are present now?
Hi, Chelsea Begay. I'm here.
Great. Thank you, Chelsea. Nice to hear you. Anyone else?
Brenda K. Kelly's here as well.
Great. Thank you, Bren. Nice to hear you as well. Anyone else? Okay. Speaker Lane, quorum has been established.
Okay. Thank you. Does everyone approve the agenda? I have one little change, I think, with consultation with one committee. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Seeing that, I would like to change where it says environmental sustainability to just sustainability committee. Is that my understanding of what the committee is called? Serena there?
Sorry. My computer is dying. Could you see?
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry.
Is that a change I should make then?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Strike out environmental sustainability and make it sustainability. There are no other changes. With unanimous consent, we can approve the agenda. Thank you, everyone. Land acknowledgement. Let me see if I can share my screen here. Lorena, you're up to read the land acknowledgement.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Can you make it a little bit bigger?
I think so.
Okay. Founded in 1889, the University of New Mexico went away. There you go. Sits on the traditional homelands of the Pueblo of Sandia. The original peoples of New Mexico, Pueblo, Navajo, and Apache, since time immemorial, have deep connections to the land and have made significant contributions to the broader community statewide. We honor the land itself and those that remain stewards of this land throughout the generations. We also acknowledge our committed relationship to Indigenous people. We gratefully recognize our history.
Okay, thank you. If everyone had a chance to look at the minutes, I'd like to approve the minutes with unanimous consent. Are there any changes to the minutes? So with unanimous consent, we'll approve the minutes. Next up is our guest speakers. Liz Hutchison is Assistant Vice President for Equity and Inclusion, and she's going to discuss the Wayfinder Project. So go ahead, Liz.
Joe?
Yep.
Apologies. Liz is actually coming in a little bit later in a few minutes, so if we could introduce Kathy and Kevin to talk about Policy 3500.
Okay, we have Kathy Agnew and Kevin Stevenson, who are the Assistant Vice Presidents for HR, and they're here to talk about the Policy 3500. Thank you. Go ahead.
Can I share screen? Is that... Ah, very good. can everybody see that? Can anybody see that?
Yes. We see the start of it. You need to,
the reforming staff pay and equity practices? Is that what you're seeing? Okay, good.
Yes. We're not seeing the slideshow. We're just seeing the...
Yeah, I don't do the slideshow version in Zoom. It never works well for me. So hopefully this is big enough for you guys to read.
Okay.
Rather than going through my technical difficulties. So I'm Kathy Agnew. I am one of two co-assistant vice presidents for human resources. Kevin Stevenson is on this meeting as well. And we'd like to go through the proposed revisions that we have for Policy 3500. So skip to the next slide. So again, with the support of UNM leadership, HR engaged Huron Consulting to conduct a pretty comprehensive review of our pay practices and our compensation strategies. The goal of the review was twofold. It was really to identify approaches to enhance our flexibility in determining employee salary levels and to ensure consistency in administering pay equity across the university. Based on their review, there were three recommendations. We needed to establish a salary placement and equity process that would align our salaries with employees' job-related education and experience. We needed to expand the review of equity to include additional personnel actions and ensure consistency across the entire school-college division. And we needed to develop a placement and equity tool to assist departments in determining appropriate salary ranges for personnel actions and equity adjustments. So that's the background piece. So in response to Huron's recommendations and to bring our pay practices more in line with best practices, HR developed a salary placement and equity tool and initiated a pilot project to better prepare for campus-wide implementation. The pilot began in the fall of 2021. We had 15 colleges, schools, divisions at level 3 org across each EVP area. So it was a total of 15. The participants operated under the revised compensation guidelines and utilized the placement tool and salary recommendations for their hiring actions and equity adjustments. They provided very valuable feedback, and it led to pretty significant improvements and refinements for our HR plan for campus-wide implementation. So as the pilot concludes, one of our next steps is to revise 3500. The revisions will facilitate a full implementation of UNM's new salary placement and equity process and provide additional flexibility for departments in the recruitment and retention of their staff workforce. The proposed policy revisions are complete and ready to move to the next phase of the policy process. Currently, it's out for constituent group comment, and the 30-day public comment period will begin shortly. Some of the changes that we are proposing are the salary parameters being established to utilize the salary placement and equity tool to identify a recommended salary range based on the individual's job-related education and experience. Internal equity, we want to increase the scope, consistency, and flexibility of internal equity reviews. In-range adjustments, we want to consolidate and streamline the requirements and the process for requesting an in-range adjustment. And the salary placement review, we want to introduce, you know, new personnel actions that before have not been included in equity, but we would like to begin including those in equity that allow departmental requests of salary reviews adjustments that are not dependent on another personnel action. So that's probably one of the key changes here. We kind of want to unhandcuff the departments and management so that they can provide increases without a triggering action necessarily. So establishing a salary, so the salary parameters utilizing the salary placement and equity tool. So we want to identify recommended salary ranges, which is what the tool does, based on individuals' job-related education and experience above the minimum qualifications for their position. We want to replace the existing minimum to midpoint starting salary guidance with a recommended range tailored to the employee's position and qualifications. We have allowed this in the past, but it's gone through additional approvals at the HR level. And we really want to give the flexibility back based on somebody's extensive experience within a field, allowing them to go above the midpoint of the range. We really want to utilize the full range that we have available, not just the min to the midpoint. We want to increase, you know, highly qualified applicants, their recommended salary ranges, exceeding grade midpoints, and provide that additional flexibility to departments. Use of the spec replacement is not limited to competitive hires, but will also be used for the other personnel actions that we were talking about, such as career ladders and reclassifications. We want to make sure that departments have flexibility to request approval to pay outside of the recommended salary range to address unusual circumstances. So that includes research. When you look at research scientists, researchers just in general, a lot of times it's field specific, right? And there is a difference. Even though they may hold a research scientist title, there may be very different market drivers related to the field that they're in. And we want to make sure that they can meet those needs and fund those in accordance with their grants and contracts that they have in place. So internal equity, so the policy revisions are intended to increase the scope and consistency of administering internal equity. Internal equity for staff personnel actions will be assessed at the school college division level rather than the current practice of reviewing for equity at only the department level. So currently the policy indicates department level. We want to increase the scope so that they're reviewing equity across college school division level. Internal equity will also be assessed on a wider range of personnel actions, including career ladders, reclassifications, demotions, and transfers. Although demotions are fairly infrequent, when you demote somebody, you do want to take a look at their education and experience for the job that they're moving down to make sure that they're being paid equitably within that range. Equity assessments, we utilize the salary placement and equity tool, which provides recommendations on a salary adjustment for existing employees and increasing flexibility for managers. The in-range adjustments. So again, we want to consolidate and streamline the definition and review process for in-range adjustments. We want to eliminate the different rules, requirements for different types of in-range adjustments. We want to increase the flexibility for departments to recognize employees who are assuming additional duties and responsibilities. Right now, the policy has it pretty limited, and our HR practices have it pretty limiting to higher-level duties or taking over, well, it's primarily higher-level duties that we're looking at. And that's not often the case. A lot of times you have consolidation of positions due to vacancies that arise, and you have individuals taking on more and more duties, which in general creates a bit of a hardship. And we want to allow departments to justify for that and give employees a bit of an increase for that additional workload. Salary placement reviews. Policy revisions introduce a new personnel action that allows departments to request a review of staff salary levels relative to the ranges recommended by the salary placement and equity tool. Right now, in order to give somebody an equity increase, it requires the triggering action. And the only triggering action that's evaluated right now are new hires. But you have smaller departments that have employees that have been in place for a number of years. They're not going to hire another individual into that particular position, so there's never going to be a triggering action. We want to open it up and allow them to take a look at their staffing, to take a look at their labor and the salaries that they're paying, and potentially increase people within the salary range itself, just as a result of somebody gaining that experience through years of service. So that's one of the areas that we're going. We're trying not to rely on a triggering personnel action. So we're really hoping that this offers some flexibility. I can tell you, and this is really the last slide, but I can tell you that the number one the negative that is currently being seen is the change from the department level to the college division school level evaluation, the cost of that. And again, I understand that, but I don't know how many of you have come from other universities or other organizations, but generally equity is completed university-wide. So we're not proposing to go university-wide. We're proposing to go a little bit broader than what has been allowed in the past. One of the issues that we face is that if we are audited or if there is a complaint for pay equity through EEOC, one of the things that they do is they come in and they ask for a complete list. And what they look at are our classifications, right, our job titles, years of service in the position, and they will look university-wide. So we're trying to kind of build on this and get a little closer to best practice across the U.S. for pay equity. So that's kind of it for us. Any questions?
Sorry, go ahead, Amy. Okay.
Thanks, Joe. I was just wondering, Kathy, if you might be able to give us a quick demo of the SPET tool, because I know a couple of folks have seen it as part of that pilot program, but I'm sure it would be interesting for the rest of us to see.
Yeah. Amy, I'm glad you asked.
Do you have a demo, Kevin, that doesn't have live people in it? I don't
no, but...
prepare something like that. I apologize.
But also, I mean, all of our live people have salaries in the Sunshine Portal. None of the information is that secret. So.
Okay.
You can use me if you need to.
I will. I will ask for forgiveness later instead of permission. All right. That's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to do this. All right. And so just a real quick demo because the tool is nice and straightforward. Here's our SPET. We're also, as part of the public comment process, we would be entertaining better names for this because the SPET is the Salary Placement and Equity Tool. So there's already a tool in the acronym, but we love saying SPET tool. So any brilliant ideas out there, we're also interested in that. so I'll go ahead and submit a new request. Here I see the organizations that I have access to. Type in the employee's name, and then I get to search for the position. So we'll go ahead and do human resources analyst. And then the way that the tool works is it recommends a salary range based on the amount of education and experience someone has above the minimum qualifications for the grade. So I see the position information here. This is a grade 11 HR analyst. I see the salary range and the minimum requirements. And so if we're looking at bringing Louis on board, let's say he has an associate's degree, so 2 years of education above the mins, and 12 years of experience, so let's say that's 7 above the minimum. And so now I see two things happen. One, I get a calculated range here. And you'll notice if we look closely, one of the coolest things potentially about this range is it's higher than the midpoint. And so part of moving to this structure is recommending what we think an appropriate range is for somebody and moving kind of beyond the, you know, no man's land of any new hire you can go minimum to midpoint, but that's it. Trying to really target in and provide a more appropriate estimated or recommended salary. So let's say, however, my department budget can't quite swing 56, but we can do 55 will be my requested rate. And this is the second cool thing that this does. When I hit go, what it does is populates the equity grid, if you will.
Wow.
And it shows all the employees that are in that same title. For those that have been entered before, it'll carry over their education and experience. It shows their salary, what their range from the calculation is, and then it's telling us if there's action required. So if someone's information is blank, it's going to say, well, I don't know, you need to put in information. If someone's paid within their range and there's not an equity issue, it'll say no action. But then it also flags these ones here where it says, ooh, something's required here, we've got an inequity. and so, you know, we use this on a regular basis, not just for equity, but even if you're hiring a single incumbent into a brand new position, it's nice to have a nice recommended range, you know, and suggestion, right, of what an appropriate pay range is. So that was quick, but you know, the tool's pretty simple and straightforward. And we're super excited about it. Is that what you were hoping for, Amy? Any other bells or whistles we can highlight?
No, that's perfect. Thank you.
Cool.
Okay, go ahead, Serena. You had a question?
Yeah, so I was wondering, you mentioned that this was done with a pilot group. When did this be implemented universally? And is this something that every employee then checks intermittently, or is this something that HR will do for every employee?
I didn't hear the full question, but so when we implement, it will be completed by the HR coordinator generally at the department level and moved to the HR agent within the college division, because the HR agent will likely have that information. There is a heavy lift at the beginning, right? So you saw that some of ours did not have years of experience, et cetera, but it did bring in some of them, which were from equity SPET, and my suggestion for SPET is salary placement and equity technology tool. Anyway, it will bring that in. So once you've input that information, it will bring it in. What we are looking at is aging the data. That's one of the things that we would like this tool to do. Once you enter somebody, it should hopefully age it. You know, because again, you could hire 1 year and not hire again for that particular title for a year or two, hopefully longer than that, right? But you want the tool to age for you. But once you've entered the information, it's there, which is really nice for the HR agents. But again, there is a bit of a heavy lift at the beginning, because you do have to go through and you have to calculate all of that. We're hoping it also lends to consistency as well. Unfortunately, you may not remember how you calculated somebody's experience, you know, a year or two ago, and you may calculate it differently, which can be problematic if we do have any claims or cases that come in. So it lends for some real consistency in that aspect as well. Did that answer your question?
Okay, Councillor Mark Fisher.
Thank you, Speaker Lane. I had two questions. First question was, in this demonstration of the SPET tool, it showed that there was actions required on some people, like Kevin showed, for inequities. When this is implemented and that shows up, is that something that's going to be automatically addressed by the HR consultant without having to be requested by the employee or their supervisor?
So, no, not automatically. They will have to submit the standard request for equity adjustment, but it is going to be evaluated at the time of hire, and we will be requesting those documents. You have to remember that an equity adjustment is an individual personnel action. It is specific to Kathy Agnew, right? So even if we're hiring Kevin Stevenson, there needs to be a document in place for Kathy Agnew to have received that equity, and that goes into the personnel file as part of the update to Banner.
So when that request...
Sorry, Mark, go ahead.
I was going to just clarify, so is that a request that an individual employee can present to HR without going through their supervisor, just to find out if they are being compensated equitably, and how is that different from them going through EEOC?
So EEOC, are we talking about the external agency EEOC?
I'm not sure. It was just the way you said it, your example.
So Equal Employment Opportunity Right Commission is an external agency where individuals who feel that they are not being paid equitably, generally based on minority or gender status, can file a complaint, and EEOC can determine whether they're going to take the case and investigate it. So not really part of this process. An individual employee would need to go through their supervisor and their department college school division if they felt that they weren't being paid equitably and wanted that type of review. That would not necessarily be something that would come directly to HR for review, unless you wanted to file a complaint with labor and employee relations or our own ethics point for CEEO, which is our compliance, equity and equal opportunity office internal to the university. So short answer is no, it's not something that individual employees would submit. It's something that departments would submit for evaluation. And keep in mind, it is possible for employers to have justifications or departments managers to have justification not to increase salary as well. But it should be a documented reason.
Yeah. And so maybe just one more thought on that. You know, what, you know, this is, I think, primarily designed as a tool to assist managers and departments with selecting appropriate salaries for personnel actions, whether that's a new hire, a reclassification, a career ladder. And so it replaces some of the kind of unwritten rules that it's, you know, it's 10% of career ladder and 7% of this and 6% for that, and says, no, if this is happening, if an employee is undergoing this action, here, let's look at a more thoughtful recommendation of that pay range. And I think just one other addition to Kathy's comments that, you know, none of this happens automatically. There are some cases where it is required. If there's, you know, a personnel action, you know, to pick on Amy, if, you know, FSM hires another business analyst, then they would be required to evaluate the education and experience of their new hire versus the folks in the department and make salary adjustments as necessary based on the equity requirements. In the slides, Kathy mentioned an increase in flexibility to equity. Right now, if a new hire triggers equity, you're required to bring your existing employee up to the salary of the new hire. One of the things that the SPEP provides the flexibility to do is it recommends a range for that current employee and provides for you to, you know, if the department is inclined and if funding is available, to bring the salary of your current employee up into their range, even if that exceeds the salary of the new employee. But it's, you know, I think it really is, it's the, you know, really, supposed to be a tool for departments in setting salaries. You know, the one other problem we have, right, that this doesn't solve is it doesn't, you know, address our availability of funds. You know, I think, particularly now more so, you know, that usually impacts what folks are able to offer new hires. I know when we bring someone into our division, you know, it's a look at education experience, but also a look at budget. And so, you know, this doesn't, eliminate those concerns or considerations. It's really another tool for departments as they navigate the process.
Right.
Thank you for that information.
Just one more item. So in looking at budgets, right, you know, you don't always end up with money at a convenient time, right, end of year, right? So you could have somebody that retires and has a higher salary, and you're going to recruit and likely hire at a lower rate, or maybe you're going to reorg a little bit. But maybe you want to take that opportunity to use some of those salary savings to increase salaries of other individuals where you would like to move them at least closer to their range, if not within their range. And it really gives departments that opportunity and that flexibility to make those decisions at the time they have the funding available.
Okay, thank you. Due to time constraints, I think we could only do one more question. I'm really sorry. Ruth, go ahead. Councilman.
Yeah, my question is in regards to, I am in a department who is using SPETS. We're a self-funded organization. We had some new hires that triggered implementing the SPETS. And I guess my question is HR gearing up their staff so that these hire, you know, the new hiring process can be in a timely manner? like what they have been in the past. I mean, this particular go around, and I'm still waiting to get people hired, we're going on almost 2 months for one 0.4 FTE person to get hired because of the stat and reevaluation. So I was just wondering, is HR really staffed up to the point to be able to get the influx of all these departments that are wanting to run the SPED?
So in answer to your question, we have how many new? Five? I think we have five new. So, yes, we have been behind in hiring actions. We are currently reviewing the 12th of September, which is much improved from the 3 weeks we were behind. I would love it, Ruth, if you would reach out to me and let me know what your rec number was so that I could take a look at it. We do have some older recs, but those are generally a result of employees or candidates. Are they really? They're not quite employees yet. Candidates not completing some of the process. And just as a quick reminder on the, I know we're running out of time, but as a quick reminder on the vaccine policy, the vaccine mandate, we have candidates that are starting work that have not been vaccinated at all. And one of the concerns that we have are that departments are not notifying those candidates, even though we have it in the posting. They should be able to read that information for themselves. But they're showing up at the onboarding stage without even having received their first vaccine. They cannot be hired in the system until they've received their first full dose, which are the two Pfizer, Moderna, or the one Johnson & Johnson. And then their booster can follow after that. So, but yeah, Ruth, if you'll let me know what that rec number is, I'll take a look at that for you.
Thank you.
But yes, we have staffed up. It's going to take them a bit to learn everything, but things are already, we're seeing some improvement there.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and call on Amy. She had a statement to make. Go ahead, Amy.
Hey, it's not a statement, but if it is okay with everybody, I would move that we pause and table this. Kathy and Kevin have graciously offered to talk more with us after Liz's presentation because she has a hard stop, so we can let her talk to us about Wayfinder, and then if there are more questions about 3500, we can come back to that in a few minutes. So that would be my motion, Speaker.
Okay. If there's no objection, we'll go ahead and work on that motion for later. We'll go ahead and have Liz Hutchison start if she's ready. Liz is the Equity and Inclusion Associate Vice President, and she's here to speak about the Wayfinder project. Go ahead, Liz.
I got to say hi, staff council. And this is the first time I've had a formal motion for me to interrupt business in a meeting, so thank you very much. And I will try to be brief. I'm sorry that my scheduling doesn't allow me to stay much past 2 o'clock today, but that will guarantee that my little professorial speak gets a little bit shorter, and that's always a good thing. Thanks, Joseph. I'm Liz Hutchison from the Department of History, and I'm also part-time in a position in the Division for Equity and Inclusion, where my portfolio includes projects seeking to enhance support to faculty and staff who have experienced discrimination, harassment, bullying, and other harms in the course of their teaching research work at the university. One of the main elements of this has been, as Kevin and Kathy have already heard, has been to introduce the Faculty Wayfinder Project, which I will quickly show you a poster with way too much information that I promise not to read. But this poster is available, and I can recirculate it to the executive committee after I speak to you. But essentially, more than a year ago, in the work we were doing to enhance the visibility and the accessibility of different kinds of university and community services that are available to staff and faculty, We began working in this research area of conflict management and trauma-informed website development, and have built a UNM-specific application that has both a browser appearance as well as a mobile version, and that simply tries to give staff and faculty a private way to navigate to and to learn about what different offices might do for them in the context of pretty bad experiences, whether it's a single experience or multiple ones. And this comes directly out of this field of research, as well as the work I'm doing with the National Academies of Science, which is focused on preventing sexual harassment in higher ed, and as well as my some years of work with individual staff and faculty who I've had the honor of supporting as they seek ways to resolve or respond to instances of misconduct or things that are really shaping and damaging their work experience. So this will be available to you if you want to read up on it. I guess the key things I would point to before I go to show you the website in development is the emphasis on research practices and best practices that we hope we are bringing forward in this project. The fact that I'm building this with very much dependent on the good graces of the IT applications team, a number of whom I know are known to you, been really great collaborators in this project. And that in that context, we've also conducted usability tests on the present state, that is, when a handful of staff and faculty are individually interviewed about how they would seek out resources to help somebody in crisis. We find that our current offerings in the world of the interwebs and finding your way to UNM offices is really, really difficult. And sometimes when you find yourself there, it's not always clear what that office can actually do to address whatever your current concern is. So that's the gist of the project. We are at a point where the Wayfinder is under development in Cascade. All of its content pages are being, you know, fanned out to offices across the university, where my attempts to write in clear, jargon-free, and non-historian prose are being tested out with all of our campus partners, so that we have a place to offer people and to offer those seeking to help each other a site that gives them a really private access to essential information. So without further ado, I'll show you that we will be beta testing what we have in the month of October with hopes of a rollout of the application to the campus community beginning in November and really becoming a full rollout in February of 2023. Why am I bringing it to staff council? Because there's a part where you'll see there's a possibility that I could direct staff users to staff council, to some part of it, to its affinity groups, and I would like to make sure that I'm sending people to the right place. So that, in addition to sort of familiarizing yourself, you guys, with the project, I also want to make sure that anything I put in there relative to staff council is fully accurate. So there's a document I can share with you all again with that information and a request for you to review it. Here, I hope I'm showing you the DEI website, which Grace Faustino has just remade in a fantastic way to illustrate where the main portal to the Wayfinder appears, although it's not active. And this box is something I'm hoping that relevant offices who receive people, who people find their offices looking for information, that access to the Wayfinder will become generalized across a lot of university websites. And it'll contain not just this brief description of its intention, but also a link to a DEI maintained page that you can go and look at now. It's basically a frequently asked questions format
about the origins of the project, how we implemented it, and what kinds of criteria we used for developing the page. Then when it really happens, we will have the Wayfinder app activated on DEI and other websites. So turning to a brief demonstration, this is something actually that I can, if I can figure out how to do it, I will put it in the chat. You are welcome to play around on the development site if that's your preference. And you will find broken links and dead ends, but I'm going to show you a pathway that illustrates the functionality of the site. At the end, if we have a few minutes for questions, I can also take those as well as receive them by email. My email is ehutch. It's pretty straightforward. So feel free to write me offline if you have a query. You'll see there are some clunky design issues here having to do with continued development, but this is essentially the landing page that people will find with brief information on something that's not the main function of this website, which is we are all reporters of some kind or another, and so there's information available for what our responsibilities are in different positions, vis-a-vis different kinds of incidents that might be revealed to us or we might witness. But the emphasis of this site is really on the user's experience and it helping the user to make their own report if that's what they want, but not so much on mandated reports by others. We've been cultivating an important set of information about the privacy of this website. And there is no juncture at which people are asked for information. We cache only the basic data that's necessary to allow for navigation of the website, and there's no permanent record of people's use of it. We also thought it would be important to offer some guidance on protecting your privacy in general in a browser setting. And so with Jeff Gathaway, we've been developing these sets of instructions. You'll also notice on this homepage, it gives you another way to go back and read about why we have this website. But in the arrangement of staff and faculty buttons, it gives you the main emphasis is for staff and faculty. The Wayfinder does not directly assess or navigate for students, although they're welcome to look at the resources. But we will provide a resource page of starting points for undergraduates, graduate and professional students, and others who don't fit neatly into staff and faculty categories. And yes, I should say at the outset, staff and faculty are not discrete categories. I'm aware that people fill different roles. And the overall design of this website is to provide opportunities for people to explore those pathways that they think are relevant to them, right? There's no point at which you get cut off if you don't have the right, you know, UNM status. You can look at the different pathways. Also on this page, something that recurs throughout the site, a button here for talking with somebody, which is essentially a list of confidential resources on campus and by virtue of being off-campus community resources. And a lot of emphasis here throughout the website on this icon and the word confidential, which we felt it was important for people to have access to remind themselves of what the university means by confidential and where your private information is and is not protected. excuse me. You also see in these areas the Exit Quickly button, which is best practices in trauma-informed websites. I'm sure you've seen those exit buttons in other contexts. So here all I want to show you is, since we developed the staff pathway first, just what happens when you click on this beautiful desert flower. Actually, you may, on your own browser, get a different layout of these tiles because we're still working to make them always show up in the same order. But we call this the What Happened page because we did some initial testing and found that it was useful to think about basic broad categories. Again, thinking about the cognitive load of people who may have just experienced trauma, some pretty simple pathways to get them to relevant information. And underneath these four main tiles, which I know you'll recognize as sort of the big categories of harm, we also thought it was important to reassure folks that they may experience multiple harms, or they may not find their experience reflected in the tiles that are offered here. And one of the successes of this website will be if people find it overwhelming, they still know they can talk to someone and find their way to someone who will be a confidential resource for getting them other kinds of help. The pathway I'm going to show you here is just discrimination or harassment. These tiles flip because this is part of accessible design. Each of these tiles, when it flips, has a definition category, basically offering examples of each particular kind of harm, as well as a paraphrased definition. That is, this is not policy language. It is a paraphrase of just how the university defines discrimination and harassment by way of providing people with some guidance about which pathway might lead to the harms or experiences they've had being recognized as such in the university's policy context. So each tile would show you, that definition, and then here is really the end of Wayfinder. Only a few clicks to get through each, explore each kind of harm. And what we call the options page, and notice here this is all done in teal. It's got a big staff banner at the top. Because a faculty member addressing some of these same harms may well have some different options, right? Or at least get directed to some different options. But here, again, this is way too much for me to try to explain very briefly, but I think it gives you context for what I'm asking you all to think about as people who may be approached, if folks end up using the Wayfinder, may be approached in search of support, advice, guidance, for dealing with particular harms. All the information on these options pages is divided into two columns, information and support, and report. And this is the fun part where I can show you what it looks like on mobile because it looks a little bit different. Sorry. Not doing what I want it to. There we go. Let's make sure my email isn't showing. Okay. More or less on a mobile screen, it will give, instead of a two-column layout, a toggle switch between reporting and information and support, which I actually think makes the information more accessible, but we will be testing to see whether people find that to be the case. All right, in just two more minutes, what do these boxes of information do? In each part of the column, we have either specific offices or, in the case of the advocates, groups of individuals who share a specific response, a set of characteristics. We've got our human resources here. Kathy, noticed we added a button just for you. It's not confidential. And I want to show you where staff counsel would show up. If you agree to it, we want this to be accurate. We want people to approach your services, your organization, with the right expectations about what can happen. And so in drafting this and working primarily from your website, I found the link to the affinity groups. I noted that this is not a confidential space with respect to Title VII employment violations or Title IX, and wrote what we call a teaser, right, where I'm trying to tell a user very quickly not everything that staff counsel does, but what might be immediately relevant to somebody who might want help from staff counsel for these types of harm and workplace conflict. The last part here, possible outcomes, is probably going to be renamed, what should I expect from the staff counsel affinity groups? Like, what do I get if I go down this pathway?
And right now, I have only a short description, again from the webpage, of what might be offered by your affinity groups. And I know that those are in different stages of formation, so you may want to tell me, hey, those really aren't ready for prime time. We can't have them on the Wayfinder. And that's all right. I want you to know that it's a space where we can agree on language that would be appropriate, or directing people to another officer or committee within the staff council. I'm basically here to listen and to hear from you all after the meeting about what you think a staff person seeking help, where they, how they should be directed, and how we should help them understand what's a reasonable expectation in approaching these offices. It might be useful if I were to compare what's basically short text for staff council with under reporting. The really big one is the EEO, because it has a lot of relevant functions for discrimination and harassment, right? It is not confidential. The website is accessible here. But if we go to what can I expect, and you may want to examine this on your own if you're interested, are a number of processes that will be better explained when you arrive at CEO. But the point here is to allow people to see that this is a reporting space that also can offer specific kinds of accommodations or responses and referrals. But that their primary goal and responsibility is hearing complaints and investigating them. And in the kinds of pretesting that we've done, I think because we've all been pretty thoroughly trained in our reporting responsibilities, everybody knows a fair amount about CEO and not much about the other offices on this page. Our preliminary testing showed even if people thought maybe there's a thing called an ombuds, they weren't always sure how to find it. So this website is trying to solve several different kinds of problems and remove barriers to access. And it is not going to be perfect. It is not going to, it's not possible in this framing, I think, to tell people exactly what they need to know. In that sense, everybody's experience is different, and I think if partly what we can do is direct people to go to confidential resources on campus, or approach those that are not confidential with an awareness that they might want to keep a few things, you know, hold things to themselves until it's time to reveal them, I think we will have done a great service that faculty, frankly, are needing as well. So that's the end of my spiel, and I am happy to take questions as well as put my email in the chat so people can send me their thoughts or ask for a meeting.
I understand you have to leave at 2, right?
So I can stay a little past 2.
A little past 2. Okay. Are there any other questions for Liz?
I usually find people are so overwhelmed, and I talk fast, so don't feel bad if you don't have questions right now.
Go ahead, Amy. You have a question.
This is so wonderful. It's not a question. I just wanted to say thank you to Liz, and just maybe it's a request for all of you to play around with the app using the link that Liz put in the chat for us. And, you know, just send your feedback in, whether it's to her or to staff council. We can collect it and give it to her.
Yeah, absolutely. Grace and I are going to design also. This thing won't be launched, you know, at the earliest by Thanksgiving. It will be available to some people. But we will develop protocols also for continuous feedback, both from users as well as from councils such as yours, so that we can easily update the information. So Grace and I will be working on that in the DEI space.
Angela has a quick question, I think. Go ahead, Angela.
Oh, yeah. Also, fabulous. Love it. As you already said, our affinity groups really vary. So I think we'll really have to work on how we present that. Some are sort of non-existent right now. So
yeah,
that's probably a step. We'll get that language together.
That would be great. What I'd like to do is resend this content that I just showed you, which is minimal. And if you have a moment to brainstorm it and you say, hey, so-and-so had an issue in their department and they contacted their representative or they contacted the president. Like, if you know that you have some even informal pathways and you want to encourage people to use them, I just need that language, right, so that I can make sure to represent that correctly here. I'm aware because I've looked at the list of the staff council groups, which is what comes up on this link. It's a really great list of groups, and I can't imagine how you could maintain all of them. So maybe think a little bit about whether you want to, on your own website, indicate which groups are active and which are not. I would say in that vein, the danger of listing everything that might exist or that we wish exists risks for a user an experience of hope and disappointment that we don't necessarily want to expose people to, like, oh, this would be the perfect group, and then you can't get in touch with anyone, is something that can be, you know, I wouldn't say want to, like, label it re-traumatizing, but on the assumption that some people will be seeking help in a fragile cognitive or emotional state, whatever we can do to be as, you know, concrete as possible about the pathways to support, I think will be an enormous help to people.
Okay. We'll get this together.
All right. Thank you. So I will send your leadership a little bundle of documents and restate my request. And I thank you for the compliments in the chat. I couldn't do this work without the trust of staff colleagues and some of the able work that leadership from staff council did with me last year. So thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Liz.
Okay. Bye. Have fun with your meeting.
To go, if there are no objections, we'll go back to asking questions for Kathy and Kevin. Are there any other questions? I know, Sierra, you have your hand up first. Are you still there?
Yes.
Go ahead, Sierra.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to know if in salary adjustment reviews, if you guys see a scenario where somebody could actually get a pay cut based on the equity review, or if it's only pay increases.
Caption off.
So the quick answer is no, there should be no pay cuts. We probably have individuals that are paid beyond their set range. Based on departmental justifications at the time of hire or whatever took place. The only time there should be a pay cut is if somebody goes down a grade, right? A lower grade, less responsibility. But even then, right, I mean, somebody going a step down should never get a pay increase, but you do want to still evaluate. It doesn't mean that they, let's say somebody takes a job and after 3 months they think, wasn't my cup of tea, and they go back to their former department, which can happen under policy now, right? They should go back at least at the rate of pay they were making before, which is standard. But no, there will never, I think I can just say flat out, there will never be a scenario where somebody who is paid above their set range will be reduced in pay. That doesn't happen. HR would say no.
Thank you.
We don't take money away.
Yeah.
We
Thank
just
you.
Spend it in other areas. To benefit.
Go ahead, Damian.
Hi, yes. My question is about the relevant education and how do you guys differentiate. I thought Kevin did answer about the relevancy of both education and experience are determined by the hiring department. So I guess there's not really any way to look at relevant education. I'm not trying to denigrate, anybody's education, but oftentimes I do see, especially in my field, that, relevant education seems to be on par and equal with the same, with educations from non-related degrees. And so there doesn't necessarily seem to be much recourse in being able to, go above and beyond with your specific degree. And I definitely see a difference in work and you know, skill sets based on degree levels, you know, when it's relevant towards the job that you're working in. So I guess, so with the SET tool, there is not really any way to differentiate beyond what the hiring department is looking at.
So we have a long history of, and again, we're an educational institution, so any education is important to university staff generally. UNM has been very generous in allowing any degree to count towards experience. So while I definitely understand what you're saying, we have a long history where we've allowed it, and we have not moved to a status of only related degrees being counted. We did have conversations about it, but it's very difficult to undo the years of standard practice that we've had. So we elected not to take it that far. Does that make sense?
It does. I just, you know, I would strongly encourage to maybe look at some way to differentiate that, you know, related degree education does help towards a job, maybe a little bit higher, you know, even just like a point bump versus, you know, the whole degree or something like that, but something along those lines. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I get it. It does become a little subjective. I've seen departments in my previous employers' situations where people have been able to justify, you know, why a mathematics degree would be very much related to an IT type position or to a research type position. So it does become a little subjective, but I think we hear what you're saying, and it's definitely something that we've had conversation about.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go with one more question. Angela, go ahead.
I was just wondering how you see issues like merit and performance being involved here, whereas you, when you see take an action, but it might be someone whose performance has not been as great as another person's.
So that's difficult, right? I can tell you right now that most people have satisfactory performances. And when I see most people, I think, Kevin, would I be wrong to say 99.89%?
And yeah, you're testing the relevancy of my math degree. But yes, I think we're at, you know, you know, I mean, it's yeah, the 5,000 staff, you've got 10 or 15 in any given year. So a high percent are successful.
So what becomes difficult is proving, right? Proving lower performance versus higher performance. And the best way that we have to do that is with a performance evaluation. That, again, can become very subjective. And if they don't do a good job of documenting, right, the differences in performance, you know, to outside agencies, it doesn't really exist. So that is difficult, and that's a struggle that you'll find in most public institutions, university, colleges. That's a difficult one to tackle and one that we have circled round and round about. And I think, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, that is that not kind of on our futuristic agenda?
Yeah, I think so, and I agree with Kathy. You know, one other comment as it relates to the equity adjustments in particular. You know, while the policy is broadening the number or the type of personnel actions that are subject to equity, not all personnel actions require an equity increase. So, you know, if you think of equity as apples to apples comparison between two folks in the same title doing, you know, pretty much the same job. Some of our personnel actions, particularly in-range adjustments, which are by design because someone's taking on additional responsibilities, more work, different work, something that makes it an apples to oranges comparison, does not trigger an equity analysis or an equity review. Retention offers, counter offers, annual mass salary updates all fall into that same bucket. And so there's some distinction, but when we look at, you know, the types of personnel actions that are tied to an equity review, either a brand new hire, you know, a reclassification, you know, non-competitively moving someone from one position to another, one grade to another. Those are those times when we do want to do, you know, do that equity assessment and review where folks are paid. But the performance discussion is, it's tough. It's hard to measure. It's hard to do consistently. It's hard to do equitably, right? I think, you know, many of us, I see lots of faces of other folks who have been here for a while, you know, and so we probably remember, you know, we had a 5-point performance review rating scale, you know, all the way from, you know, I don't even remember what the, yeah, but it was like needs improvement, you know, meets expectations, exceeds expectations, outstanding, you know, and then it went down to just 3 points and now we're at the successful, not successful. You know, if you think of the pendulum will probably swing back the other way eventually and we'll get more granularity. But it's also so subjective and hard to administer that consistently. You know, if you look at outstanding ratings being reserved for the top, you know, 1 or 2% of employees, but we have 30% of our folks getting outstanding ratings, is that a meaningful judgment of performance? It's just complicated and hard, which is not an excuse to not think about it or try to do it, but it's complex, so.
Okay, thank you, Kathy and Kevin. If we have other questions, can we email you guys?
Yes, please do. And I think Kathy and I meet with Sydney in the morning to review the constituent feedback we've received on this, but we're optimistic that it'll go out for public comment very soon. But yeah, if anybody has questions, please reach out to either Kathy or me and, you know, let us know your feedback, your questions, your comments, et cetera.
Okay, thank you. Our next on our agenda is constituent comments. Are there any constituent comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to the reports, the president's report from Amy. Go ahead, Amy.
Thanks, Speaker Lane. I don't have a huge amount to report to you today because much of what has been going on has been related to HR policies, and we just got a chance to learn what is happening. But one thing I wanted to tell you all about is an opportunity that's arisen for us to work together with GPSA, ASUNM, and Faculty Senate to draft a joint resolution with some attainable goals to address climate change. And so this is very early on. This is something that we just talked about yesterday, but we've already taken it. I took it to President Stokes yesterday, and both the GPSA president and the ASUNM president took it to the provost yesterday. So we anticipate that we're going to put something together within the next month or so, and once I have more details and know how many people we can bring to this working session, I will let you guys all know. And I am afraid that what may happen is we may have way more people interested than the number of seats that we'll have available, but that's an excellent problem. So do you think you can devote some time to, you know, working with those other shared, you know, governance groups here on campus? I would love to hear from you. And again, more info coming soon. There have been some concerns I'll also mention about the Talking with Tommy event that happened last Thursday on campus. And I just wanted to let you all know that the UNM administration is absolutely investigating that event, as well as UNMPD. So each of, you know, UNMPD and UNM administration are both investigating different things. But as soon as we know more, I will definitely let you know. And then really the final thing that I have is I would like to reappoint Jean Henley to the Faculty Staff Benefits Committee.
So, Joe, I fear you would seek unanimous consent.
If there is no objections, we can approve Jean Henley to the Benefits Committee. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Jean is a well-respected member of that committee, and I'm delighted that he's willing to serve another term. So thank you, Jean. I will take any questions you have about my report, although probably there won't be too many because it was very short.
Are there any questions for President Amy? Seeing none, I guess Grace isn't here today, is that right? So there's no Vice President report? I mean, President-elect report?
So Grace gives the Executive Committee report, which basically, like the other committee reports, lets you know what exec has been working on. I could tell you that we've been working a lot on policy, and then we've also had some discussions about talking with Tommy. So there's probably not a whole lot that would have been additional in that report.
Okay, thank you. And then I'll give my report. I need to make some appointments to different committees. The IT committee, I would, without objection, I would like to add Lewis Worley and Eric Castillo to that committee. Is there any objection to that? I would also, for the DEI committee, I would like to appoint Anisha Asundi to that committee, if there's no objection. For the sustainability committee, I would like to add Sharina Desai as chair, Carla Sakiestiwa co-chair, and join, appoint members John Ski, Michael Mudd, and Grace Bastino. I know there are probably other names that need to be added to committee, but let me know and we'll discuss it at the next committee. Are there any questions on that point? Okay, and I also want to talk about, just ask questions during these reports. Don't make any comments unless you move to sustain the meeting so you can make a comment about a certain topic that's pertinent to the committee report or the report, president or president-elect reports. So just keep that in mind when you move forward. And that's all that I have. So now we move on to the treasurer's report.
Hi, I'll share my screen. Can you see the screen? No.
No.
Because I didn't share it yet. Now can you see it? Yeah. The treasurer's report this year will always be amusing. Creative because it seems like every month I change up what it looks like. So I just wanted to give you a little heads up. The green area right here for treasurer's report as of September, there's our budget. There was just minimal spending in the general fund, and so we have the balance available. And we have two projects that were brought to exec on one. They're shown down here. One was the Mental Health Awareness Day, helping support that effort, and the Outstanding Supervisor Award, which they submitted their funding request of $31.50. If you can see right here in the yellow, $3,643 is still available, and it was recommended that they may use some of that funds to have additional supervisor awards recommended to the committee. Rewards and recognition, that is. And this is a nice little funky map, graph. Throughout the year, you'll see this hope start moving downward, and you'll get a better visual of what we have left in the funds. Is there any questions? No? Really? Just kidding. Okay. All right. That's it for my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla.
And the next on our agenda is committee reports, rules and elections.
Hello, everybody. This is Mark Fisher, Chair of Rules and Elections. We did have one meeting since our last business meeting. We met on the 7th of September. Just to review our governing documents and standing rules per request of the committee chairs as far as in regard to whether or not a process change requested as far as changing how we submit both meeting minutes and committee reports, if they could consolidate that to alleviate work burden. So we reviewed the documents and we agreed unanimously that likely a process change wouldn't affect our governing documents and would not require any amendments. So we sent that information back to Joe Lane as the speaker. And it will be discussed at the committee chairs meeting coming up, I believe, next week. And they will decide on what process change they would like and not. And that was all we discussed this month. Any questions? Thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Mark. Moving on to the ethics committee.
I'm here. The ethics committee, we did meet this month. We did not have any new business or any unfinished business. It was the first committee meeting with the new members, including myself, on it. We did decide, however, since our committee, you know, we don't have any business until we get asked to do something, we have decided to look at various ethics-related case studies, particularly with various universities, just to give ourselves a good idea of what happens with different things that could someday come to our attention.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Jessica? No. Communication and Marketing Committee? Is anyone here for the Communication and Marketing Committee? Moving right along, Diversity and Equity and Inclusion Committee. Angela, did you have anything?
Thanks, Joe. We have lots of irons in the fire. Just to note that the New Mexico Diversity Conference will be coming up, which is for all of higher education, and Lorena Blanco-Silva is leading that, so we're hoping to really jump into organizing that, and we'll be asking you all to jump into that as well. A couple new things. Our next meeting, we'll be meeting with someone who is working on ADA issues across campus, so we'd like to start working on those issues with the committee and coming up some, well, some interesting projects around that. And then one other thing to mention is we just started a working group looking at hiring and education for formerly incarcerated individuals. That was prompted by the recent announcement of background checks for all staff, but it's something that we've kind of had on the list for the last couple of years, training programs that we might be able to better move into UNM employment. So that's just starting. So if anyone's interested, let me know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Angela? Sustainability Committee, and then just started.
Thank you, Super Lane. Just wanted to say we had our first meeting on September 8th, and it looks like I'm frozen. Can you all hear me? Okay. So we just had our first meeting, and I think more than half of our interested folks were not able to attend, but that's okay. We essentially decided on when a standing meeting would be monthly. And for the first part, we're just trying to gather a contact list of different entities on campus and throughout the city of Albuquerque of anybody who might be interested in different aspects of sustainability, just to kind of gather who all is here already doing stuff. And I started with a list. I reached out to already environmental health and safety and one of our big facilities managers here, but I know that there's plenty of other entities. I see that there's a sustainability group on Twitter and Facebook that is from UNM, and so I have yet to reach out to them and also the master's program. But I'm hoping that by our next that we're trying to do, and we're also trying to get a SharePoint and listserv established.
Okay, thank you, Sharina. Are there any questions for Sharina? Is there anyone here from the Government Relations Committee? HSCS Committee. Is Christine here?
Christine is not here. She is out on annual leave. We did not meet this month and plan to meet in early October.
Okay. Thank you. The IT committee, any questions, any updates from your report?
Yes, we did meet. We had the lost UNM review of the kind of the lost help UNM tickets that has been a point of discussion in the staff council. One of the ideas that we had was to potentially look at getting examples at large so we would have something to provide to IT for maybe being able to review. Although one of the questions we do have is that it is, I guess it's, you know, it's a tax issue or politically dangerous issue potentially to reach out of bounds. To be able to contact potentially like the director of the support center for being able to just ask for their blessing and help. So I guess that's one of the questions on that is how to best tactfully be able to approach that issue for being able to provide how can staff council help IT with maybe finding a way to resolve these tickets faster and of more benefit to the staff at large. We had a discussion about brainstorming ideas of things that we could be doing. That's all in the report. And we talked about meeting a little bit more frequently and then maybe being able to have a review of maybe new technologies that might be of benefit to staff. Any questions?
Are there any questions for Damian? Sorry.
One last thing to add is definitely there is some concerns on North Campus with HSC and the IT reorg, that there are some members of the HSC IT staff that will be shifting to work directly for UNMIT versus some that are going to be shifting to work for UNMH, and I think there's some concerns about potential loss of benefit, although they will be maintaining with working with, you know, under UNM benefits, but they will be looking at losing, our holiday hours, I think was kind of one of the biggest concerns that they might be losing. So that was also a discussion.
Okay, thank you. Rewards and recognition.
So a lot of it's in the report, but one reminder and then one thing that I want to present to the council for potential change. One is a Outstanding Supervisor Awards closed. The reward ceremony is going to happen on the 17th of October, but we need to have all of the nominations scored quickly, and we have 120 of them. Yeah. So any help we can get from anyone who wants to help score them, I'm like, should I have saved the volunteers before telling you how many? No. So we need help going through all of them. This is a record number from what I hear as far as how many nominations we've had for this award, which is fantastic, yet at the same time, a very daunting process moving forward, which we will internally take note of to maybe shift when just a little bit as far as when things are open and closed so that we can have more time to review them. But if you're open to doing it. I sent an email out to everybody. Just let Grace and I know that you're interested. The other thing that I want to present is we have been struggling to have PAWS nominations for the PAWS Awards. And we had, even when we do marketing pushes and put it out there and say, don't forget to nominate people, sometimes we get a nomination. And if we don't have one, we roll it over to the next month. But in the goals of increasing the competition in a healthy way and also wanting to recognize employees for their great work, on behalf of the reward, I'll show you a little, my proposal. So on the, on behalf of the Rewards and Recognition Committee, we propose to move from a monthly PAWS awards to a quarterly PAWS awards, so that we can hopefully have more nominations. It won't become stagnant in marketing, because if it's a monthly thing, people see it all the time and start ignoring it. And so the hope is that as it disappears and then comes back, they'll be more likely to nominate somebody, and then that also will increase the level and quality of the nominations. So I'll open it. I don't know. I can never get these procedural things right. So I move on behalf of the committee to put it to a quarterly system rather than monthly, as this is something the entire council needs to decide on. And I'll open it up for questions if that's my role. And if not, I'll let Joe do it.
Since this is coming from committee, is there a second?
You don't need a second.
You don't need a second? Okay. So without objection, we can accept it as a quarterly award, the PAWS as a quarterly award. Is there any objection to that motion? No? Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Gade?
Then I am done. Thank you.
You're done. Thank you. Staff Success Committee? Anyone from here? Staff Success? Strategic Planning Committee. I don't think they've met for a while, and Grace isn't here today. Is there any new business we need to take care of this week, this month? Not seeing any. Adam, it's time for your 10-minute tidbit. Are you ready for that?
Mr. Speaker, I was born ready.
Okay, you have the floor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. First, to remind everybody about the Staff Council Parliamentary Series and the last class that we had, really good attendance, really great participation. So I'd like to encourage everybody to come. The next one is tomorrow, and tomorrow is going to be an introduction to motion. So if you've ever wondered, well, how do I make a motion, or how do I make an amendment, or how do I move to postpone something? Feel free to come, and all levels are invited, and we will explore your questions, and I'll show you the basics, and it's really quite simple. So I hope to see a lot of people there tomorrow. What I'd like to talk about today is yet another power the Staff Council has, and unfortunately, it's a power you haven't been using for a very long time, and it might be intimidating. So maybe an introduction to how you write a resolution might be empowering for the Staff Council. So there's no opinion of a Staff Council without a vote. It would make the President's life easier for her to say the Staff Council wants X. Well, if you don't take a vote, she doesn't know what the Staff Council wants. She might know what a few of the members want, but the only way to express the opinion of the council is with a vote, commonly done with a resolution. And the Staff Council has had many, many, many resolutions in the past make really positive changes at the university. When the president or other administrators at the university receive a resolution, it sends the message that, wow, they took the time to put down their thoughts, put down their recommendations, they did their research, and this is what they want to do. So a resolution is very powerful, and you can, and it is the only way for the staff council to actually express its opinion. No vote, no opinion. So take a look here. This is the bare bones. This is the outline that you can use, and you can see how easy it is. I know that sometimes some folks are intimidated. They see these massive resolutions from state or national legislature, you know, several hundred pages long, and they're like, we couldn't do that. Well, here's the form right here. Piece of cake. You've got the heading here. The Amy Hawkins can help you with the number, what it is for the year, the name that is the subject you want to address, who helped write it, when is it going to be presented to the staff council, and whereas this has been a problem for the university for 20 years, whereas other universities have done X, Y, and Z, whereas the University of New Mexico would benefit by having this new fabulous thing that we have researched. Resolved that the university implement a policy to address specific. Resolved the university will promote X, Y, and Z. And then number six here, is a suggestion. It's extremely common across the campus. You'll see this in the resolutions from ASUNF, from GPSA, sometimes from Faculty Senate. You don't have to have it, but it sends the message, I think, when you include which responsible or interested parties or parties you would like to be interested will receive this. Obviously, Amy Hawkins doesn't need this to send it to various portions of the community, but it is good to designate who you think the interested parties should be. And it also lets the other interested parties know who the other interested parties are. Oh, wow, they sent this to the Associated Press. Oh, wow, they sent this to the Executive Vice President. Oh, wow, they sent this to the Mayor's office for the city of Albuquerque. Okay. So you can do all of those things to promote your resolution. So I want to and it is also wise to use resolutions to create your standing committees and your ad hoc committees. And it can be real quick. It can be the need you're trying to address, resolve that a staff council committee will be formed, it will be named this, and it will focus on the following. Now, the reason it's a really good idea to use a resolution to create these is you never want to be in a situation where somebody says, so what is the scope of our committee? What is it we're actually supposed to be doing? I don't know. When was the motion made? I don't know. But if you all have a copy of the resolutions that create your committees, easy peasy, quick check, oh yeah, we're supposed to be working on this, this, and this. Well, you know, I'd really wish we could work on this other thing. Great. Now we know to go back to the staff council for and ask for an amendment in the resolution. That way everybody's clear on what the committee does and there doesn't have to be a lot of speculation because, of course, as we know, clarity combats confusion. So I hope this helps, and there's a lot of resolutions on your webpage that you can take a look at to see how others have been written. And if you have any questions, and if you want any help, please let me know. Please let Rules and Elections know. The staff council president is a champ on this. So you've got a lot of resources if you would like to step up. And here's the thing. Don't feel like you have to write a resolution if you think that there's absolutely nothing to improve at the university. So if you think, what is it? What is it that needs to be improved at the university? What should the university be doing better or differently? What concerns do you have that have not been addressed by the university? get with an appropriate committee, get with your fellow counselors, and write a resolution asking the appropriate bodies to make things better in a very specific way. Mr. Speaker, thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam. Are there any questions for Adam before we move on? Thank you. Are there any counselor comments? This is a time you can promote something that your group is doing or make announcements that we need to know. Okay, not seeing any. Are there anybody who would like to do a counselor introduction? Not seeing anyone. Well, thanks for coming, everyone. I officially adjourn this meeting. Thank you.